Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the trade association representing destination organizations around the globe, brought to you exclusively by Relic Agency as part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andreas Weisenborn, and welcome you for checking out our podcast. For each episode, we want to tell the story of both usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and the key advocacy moments for them. These stories are meant to tell the tale in full, covering many of our strategic issues and opportunities our sector faces, whether it be community alignment, destination stewardship, resilience, or actions based on values. We hope you listen in and learn from your peers. With that, let's get to the show. Hello, and welcome back, everyone. Before we get on to our next guest and our upcoming podcast episode, I thought we'd take a good place to talk a little bit about where we are right now in 2022. We have, of course, a little bit now, 2 years of the anniversary of the pandemic. I know it's kind of crazy, but we just surpassed Friday the 13th, which would have been when, for a lot of us, our worlds changed. So, of course, wanted to make note of just that monumentous moment. In addition, of course, make note of just what's happening now in the world with the current global conflict happening with Ukraine. And, of course, what we are seeing as destinations and the ramifications of that. I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge those two, you know, large moments happening right now, and particularly affecting not just our sector, but all livelihoods around the world. With that, I also want to put a note of our upcoming events for Destinations International, just so everyone is aware of where and when we will be next. So forthcoming next will actually be CEO Summit. Again, all the events I'll be talking about will be in person. So first is CEO Summit happening April 3rd through the 5th in Palm Springs, California. After that, you'll see us in the Marketing and Communications Summit, happening again in person, April 24th through the 2016th in Seattle, Washington. If you're interested in doing your CDME, we're actually doing a special CDME Spring Canadian course happening May 3rd through the 6th in Calgary, Alberta. After that, we will be actually back in Canada, but this time for our big one, the 2022 Annual Convention. This will be happening July 19th through the 21st in Toronto, with actually CDME as well taking place before that over the weekend, if you're interested. After that, one close to my heart, Advocacy Summit, will actually be in Bloomington, Minnesota in October 26th through the 28th, with again also CDME happening the weekend before that, which will be the 23rd through the 26th, 2022. Again, all these events will be taking place in person, and we hope you can join us there in one of them. So with that, on to our guest. So for today, we are talking with Courtney Kakashian, Executive Director of the Charlottesville Albemarle Convention and Visitors Bureau. So one of the many things we watch for in destinations are what we call flashpoint politics or events. Largely, this is an event that takes place within a destination, mostly largely outside of the control of a destination organization, but yet leaves the destination organization remaining to pick up the pieces. Now, one of the largest events we have ever seen in our sector's history is what occurred this summer of 2017 in Charlottesville, Virginia. Now, today is not for the retelling of those events, but really to talk about the story since then and the incredible work that has been done by Courtney and her team. Prior to her role at Charlottesville, she served as the executive director for Discover Bristol and director of marketing for Arlington, Virginia CVB, along with previous roles and responsibilities with the National Park Service, George Washington University, and the World Wildlife Fund. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
As I mentioned, one of the things we have always looked out for destination organizations is what we call these flashpoint politics or flashpoint events, something that just happens largely outside of your control, but you are left, you know, in terms of the responsibility to managing the pieces and so forth. And we have not seen a large example of that, you know, really in our time since what happened in Charlottesville. And I wanted to ask, in 2017, you obviously were not part of the Charlottesville Bureau, but you were not an outsider to the sector. You were working at a destination organization. Just was sort of curious, what was your reaction when you were experiencing, you know, that summer and seeing that not only play out the news, but also the empathy of understanding what that destination organization might be going through?
Yeah, so I was at the Arlington, Virginia CVB when those events were taking place. And we were actually working on a grant application through Virginia Tourism with the Charlottesville CVB. So you know, we had been having conversations, their director of marketing at the time and me, and, you know, just when the events happened, being in Virginia, being so close outside of the nation's capital, it was shocking. And, you know, just, I remember reaching out to the director of marketing at the time and saying, you know, how can we help? What can we do for you? And, you know, it was just a really upsetting period of time for anybody, I think in Virginia and probably in the country, but also just knowing that they were going to have to try and figure out how to keep tourism going afterwards. You just have tons of empathy for how you make that place feel safe and welcoming again.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a kind of a great point when to connect to the next was, you know, since then, you know, the previous executive retired in 2018. You are now since then been the first new executive director hired for the organization. Knowing what you know and from the outskirts of your time in Bristol and now taking the role, what was your first 100 days like as being the brand new executive director for Charlottesville?
Yeah, so I started in August of 2019. So just a week before we were going to come up on the second anniversary of the events. And so I knew that the media was going to reach out and I hadn't been in town when it happened and I needed to get up to speed really quickly. So I started with talking to my team. Most of the team that was still left at that point had been there working for the Bureau and also had been in town that day. They had also seen Charlottesville's response a year later. And so we were kind of bracing ourselves for a similar response and possibly people coming to town to try and make their voices heard on the second anniversary. I also reached out to Rita McClenny with Virginia Tourism and Jack Barry in Richmond to try and get their perspectives on things because they're so seasoned and they would have had some perspective at that time. And so really, you know, that first week was trying to collect as much information as possible about what message we wanted to put out. And when I was interviewed by the media during that week, it was very much a standard DMO response of it was a one-time event. You know, it was obviously tragic and, you know, we're continuing to feel the impacts of it here, but we're a welcoming place and we want you to come back. Over the course of the first 100 days, I came to realize that, you know, there was more going on behind the scenes than I realized. And there was a reason why our community was continuing to talk about those events 2 years after they had happened. It wasn't just because it was, you know, such an upsetting time and, you know, gained national attention because of the presidential response to it, but also because it had really, you know, opened up a festering wound in our community. And so, you know, trying to understand that, frankly, took a lot more than 100 days. It was most of what I spent my first year in Charlottesville doing. I also, one of my observations before coming to town was that we had a board that had been redone since Kurt's departure, that board at that moment in time was made up of 15 white people, which when I was asked what's the first thing I would change when I got to town was, well, we need to diversify the board. And people are like, well, we just redid this board, so I'm not sure that's a great idea. I was like, well, I'm not sure that it's a great idea to have a board that doesn't represent our community and isn't providing diverse perspectives. And so that was on my list of to-dos in the first 100 days, but obviously took a lot longer to accomplish.
Yeah. So it's lots there. Let's unpack a little bit of it. It seems so much just the way the world's attention is now. Things are seen as flashpoints and then forgotten. But as you indicated, nearly 2 years after the event, your community is still, you said, a festering opening wound. What did you feel, you know, overall perception of the destinationalization was, you know, both during and before 2017, and obviously when you first got there, you know, how did you feel people saw the role of what tourism and destination promotion should do or represent for the community?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of the leadership that was in place during the summer of 2017 in the city was gone by the time I got there 2 years later. And so, you know, there were a number of different reasons for that. And, you know, I think the previous leadership got caught up in that too. However, our organization didn't have a great reputation. You know, this gets to a lot of the work that the Tourism Lexicon talks about, which is, you know, we've historically paid a lot of attention to talking to visitors and not to our community. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think they were doing a bad job promoting Charlottesville and Albemarle County prior to me being there, but I'm not sure that they were as connected with the community as they could have been. But I also heard feedback along the lines of, you know, the CVB has been dismissive of different stories in the past. And, you know, we had a very strong focus on being Thomas Jefferson's town. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is a complicated man and has, you know, some ugly history associated
with him. Just to make sure everyone understands who that is, could you just explain sure. who Thomas Jefferson is and his famous home?
So Monticello is Thomas Jefferson's home, and it's in Albemarle County. The University of Virginia is also his university. And he was the third president of the United States. He owned hundreds of enslaved people, and they were the people who built Monticello and the University of Virginia. And the architecture is known around the world. The University of Virginia and Monticello together share a designation as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. But the architecture, beyond being beautiful and innovative at the time, purposefully hid the enslaved people. And as I said, it was purposeful, and the way that it was made so that we were hiding an entire group of people throughout how both entities were made. And so, you know, he had a relationship. I hesitate to even say relationship. He owned Sally Hemings, and yep. she was a teenager, and he had children with her. And so there's a complicated history there. And it's an ugly history. And it's one that, you know, many people in Charlottesville and the surrounding community are related to him one way or another. And, you know, that persists as part of our complicated racial history here.
So the other thing I wanted to unpack too, you mentioned, you know, one of the first things you initiated and start you put forth in your interview was changing the board structure. That's definitely guns a-blazing. You know, that's something most, you know, probably new desterritorization leaders, okay, I'll handle that in my second to fifth year. You said that right from the onset. No, we need to change this. I know you've been successful with this, but I wanted to ask, what was that process like? You know, to changing a board structure and being representative of the community, what was that process like for you and the organization, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little terrifying because they're the people who just hired me, right? So they obviously thought I was great and hired me into the role. And I'm basically like, well, I'm not so sure about you all. I'd like to change you. And you know, when you're doing that, you're risking the new board potentially deciding to get rid of you or the board that you're trying to change deciding yep. to get rid of you. You know, I mentioned the racial makeup, but I didn't mention the position makeup. We had 8 government representatives and 7 loosely related industry representatives. There was no dedicated accommodations role on our board, no dedicated food or beverage role on our board. And so, you know, we weren't representative of the industry. And we were highly political. 4 of those 8 government roles were elected officials. And so, you know, having come from Bristol, where we needed to have a better relationship with our elected officials, it was valuable to me that we had engagement from elected officials.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, the dynamics of having 4 different elected officials on a board representing 2 different localities is really tough to navigate. And so it took a long time. You know, I needed to be really purposeful about going about the work, and I needed to build community, and I needed to show that I was valuable too, so that I wasn't just going to get kicked out the door as I was starting to bring these things up. And so I built a relationship with all of the electeds on my board. And then I had met with one of them early on, and she had asked specifically about the elected official representation on the board. But it was our very first meeting, and I wasn't sure what answer she wanted to hear. And I was like, oh, it's fine. And then a year later, after I'd known her better, I went back to her and I said, what did you mean by that question a year ago? And she's like, it seems like it's outsized for your board. And I said, I agree with you. How do we go about it? And so it was by having that building that relationship with that one elected official, and I needed her in order to make those changes. The city manager and the county executive were also hugely helpful. We have less than a $2 million budget, and we had the city manager, the county executive, and four electeds on our board. And if you did the math on that, we were using much more of their valuable, expensive time than our budget warranted. And so that was another way that we went about having those conversations of, you know, is this really worth this amount of investment from the government governing bodies, yeah, especially when we're not representing the tourism industry as we should.
Oh, and, you know, like I said, bold steps that your first move on there. I'll always paraphrase and quote one of our good friends of the show, Bill Geis, always talks about, it always starts at the board. That is who not only need to be reflective of the community, but they also need to be your biggest engaged assets, you know, to represent, you know, the work that you do and the why tourism and destination promotion matters. So the fact that you tackled that alone in your first, you know, under 2 years is an incredible achievement. One thing, a comment you made in there was making sure that the makeup of the board was more representative of the community, particularly around EDI initiatives. I do want to ask, one of the things that we have really seen the work take off there is the announcement and the launch of Black Seaville. So I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about the origin. What is Black Seaville for you all?
Yeah, so after I had kind of unpacked the fact that the way that the CSAVB had historically talked about our tourism destination and how many white residents viewed our place didn't match with the way that the Black residents were experiencing our home. There is a Jefferson School African American Heritage Center in Charlottesville, and it's a museum, it's an art exhibit, but it's also a community center for Black residents and the residents of Charlottesville as a whole. And the executive director, Dr. Douglas, took us on a 2-hour walking tour and explained our downtown area from the Black resident perspective. And that tour ended with, we've been told in the past by the CACVB that our stories don't matter to tourists. And, you know, that really, that was a gut punch and just, you know, really awful to hear. And when I continued to reach out to Black residents, especially who were involved in the tourism industry, I kept hearing that over and over again of, you know, we aren't valued. We're not valued in the community. We're not seen as individuals. And, you know, we don't have a voice in what we're doing. And so after about a year of those conversations one-on-one with people, I met with Justin Reed, who works for Virginia Humanities and is on the board of Virginia Tourism Corporation. And he and I spent what was supposed to be a half hour meeting turned into a 3-hour meeting of what do we do next? And looked again to Richmond Region Tourism, where they had started a BLK RVA initiative and invited them to come in and speak to a group of only Black residents who were somehow tied to the tourism industry. Mm-hmm. And we continued those conversations over Zoom, and, you know, COVID has obviously done terrible things to our industry, but I never would have gotten the attention of everyone if we hadn't all been homebound with very little social outlet. It really accelerated the process of what would have been really difficult to do in community meetings. I was able to accomplish in over Zoom meetings. And we started to build a brand and talk about what stories we wanted to tell and how we wanted to go about that. And that turned into Discover Black Seaville, And so last spring, spring 2021, we launched a landing page and an Instagram and Facebook account. But we knew that that community buy-in was going to be essential for us feeling like this was an authentic representation of our place. And, you know, I'm white. I'm not going to be able to speak on behalf of Black residents. And so we had have a consultant, Scott Hamler, who runs those social media accounts. And he's a marketing guy who's located here. And has really built that authenticity. And so we've been waiting for the right time. We really wanted to build the content in those channels so that when people came to them from outside, they really saw the breadth and variety of what we had to offer and what we were saying about our place, especially for Black travelers. And so we've spent almost a year doing that. And we are going to be pushing our national launch on March 26th. There is a concert that happens on an annual basis called Vibe Fest. And one of the Vibe Fest founders has been working on this project with us since the beginning. And so it felt like the right time to have a collaborative launch. And we have one of the projects our community identified was having a mural as something that was tangible and visible. And so we're going to be unveiling our mural that same day. And it's being painted by a local Black artist. And it's based on his daughter, but it's also a community effort. Many of us are going to go out and help with a painting of it, which is really cool and really building community together, which is great. We've gotten a lot of media interest from the Discover Black Seville press release that we sent out, and we're really excited to launch that in association with our community on March 26th.
Now, to go from, I guess, the gut punch comment to everything that you have launched and are about to launch, I mean, you're talking major efforts, you said concerts, murals. How do you feel the community, you know, has responded thus far to these efforts? And do you think would they have been as receptive to something like this 5 or 10 years ago from the Bureau, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, well, it's really relationship-based. And when I'm meeting with people one-on-one, they know that I care and that I'm genuine in the efforts and not just trying to create a marketing campaign that's going to fix our reputation, and that I actually want to do the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion, especially through, you know, helping our Black businesses. And, you know, that kind of came to really felt real a couple of weeks ago when the Black Empowerment Coalition reached out and said, we want to have a meeting with you to see why this has been successful and why our community is so excited about it and how else we can leverage what you all have been doing, because it has been successful. You know, the community response has been phenomenal. People are excited. You know, we have hats that we worked with. Again, a local Black owner of a apparel business to create. So we gave our logo to him so that he can exclusively sell the apparel that says Discover Black Seville on it. I brought the hats to the Black Empowerment Coalition meeting, and people put them on and then were wearing them out and Instagramming right afterwards.
That's awesome.
So it's very cool. I mean, I don't know that the Bureau could have done it before. I think it's really people-based of whether or not people are coming at it with the right intention. And, you know, also the conversations that happen when you're not in the room of, you know, meeting with the right people and saying the same thing over and over again, that you're really committed to doing the work.
Yeah, but what a cool feeling, as you mentioned, you know, now entities in the community are coming to you, the desexualization, saying, how can you help us do more with this? Which is like the quintessential definition of, you know, what we call being a community shared value, which that has to be a cool feeling to hear and to observe.
It's been amazing. I mean, I'm not sure that I've ever felt more gratified in my work than being called upon for that reason. It's been amazing.
So a lot of stuff you mentioned that's, you know, forthcoming to launch. I mean, you're really talking about the beginning, the onset of a lot of EDI initiatives and not just Black Seville, but where else do you hope to see more in the community, you know, that go beyond just this or as a starting point with this at least?
Yeah, so we launched the Discover Black Seville social media channels last spring. And then we had white business owners coming up to us going, well, how do we get featured? Mm-hmm. And we said, it's not for you. You know, this is to highlight Black businesses and, you know, Black joy and experiences that people have here. So, well, we want to be a part of it. And so, you know, I took that to heart, and we've been wrestling with it. Sophia Hyder-Hawk and Talia Salem both helped us with Discover Black Seville. And also I took this question back to them and to our Discover Black Seville steering committee, which is about 8 or 10 of our leaders in the community who are in tourism and who are African-American. And we all chewed on this for a while and said, you know, I think what we don't want to do is promote experiences that have our approval and then not have the visitor really feel welcome when they go into those businesses. And how do we bridge that gap? We decided that none of us necessarily knew the answer, and we needed to get some of that feedback from the community. And so in November, we had our first Tourism for All workshop session, which was just a listening session where we said, this is the issue that we're looking at. How do we make the tourism economy open to underrepresented businesses? What are the gaps that you need us to fill to get there? And then how do we make sure that all of our businesses are and attractions are welcoming to any visitor who steps in the door? Because that's what a destination marketing and management organization is supposed to do, is make people feel welcome. Yeah. And we knew that we may not be able to provide all those resources, but if we could identify where those gaps were, then we can start to do that work. And so in, I think it was February, we ended up having two workshops, and one was marketing focused on how the businesses can do review, you know, manage their reviews through Yelp and TripAdvisor, how they have their presence on our website, how they can do videography and photography that is representative. And then we had another conversation of, you know, how do we become a more welcoming community? What steps do we really need to take to get there? And we're continuing those conversations. We received some ARPA funding, American Rescue Act plan funding, and are dedicating $100,000 towards an action plan to try and continue to tease this out as we're trying to get our community up to speed, but also our organization up to speed on how we can be welcoming to anyone.
Yeah, all incredible work. Again, I want to thank you for spending your time with us talking about, and kind of the last question I wanted to ask you is, you know, this July will be the 5-year anniversary of 2017, but I want to go a little further out. We hopefully get to 2027, the 10-year. How do you hope both, you know, the world and the community feels about Charlottesville if we get to that point?
Yeah. It's been so interesting. And I think politics, national politics, plays such a huge role because, you know, we had found a lot of distance in subsequent years since I've been here, that the insurrection on January 6th of 2021 really brought back to the forefront and kind of was the bookend to what happened in Charlottesville. And so, you know, I really hope that by the time we get to be 10 years out, that, you know, Charlottesville's name is no longer synonymous with a single series of events from the summer of 2017. And that we're, you know, a bit of an underdog story of a community that really had to grapple with our identity and the racial divide here, and that we have come out from the other side of it stronger and a better destination and a community because of it.
Incredible answer. So Courtney, again, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and congrats on all the incredible work you and the team have been doing in Charlottesville. So
thanks so much.
With that, thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weisenborn, and Courtney Kakashian of this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org or check out content throughout the advocacy section at the site or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.